This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
So hey everybody, welcome to episode 382 of the More Than Just Co podcast. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined by Jaime Lopez Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
And we're also joined by Mark Rubin in San Jose, California.
Hello.
And we have a special treat. We've got Evan Stone from, where are you again, Evan?
Well, if you want to get technical, Petaluma, California.
Petaluma. Yeah, that's good.
North of San Francisco.
North Bay, right?
Yes. North of Bay.
Cool. Cool. I think the furthest north I've been, is that where the Muir Woods are? Is that north of San Francisco?
They're a little south. Yeah, they're like between me and San Francisco. What I usually tell people is, if you know where Napa is, I'm about 45 minutes west of that. Most people know Napa. Mm-hmm. Even in other countries, they know wine country, Napa, all that stuff.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I just use that as a reference point.
Sure. Cool. All right. So we have, it's been a while since we've been on. The three of us, at least, the three main hosts have been together, so we don't really have much fact check, per se. I probably have some fact checks from some of the past episodes I've done solo, but I put it under follow-up, but it's not really follow-up. I just wanted to talk about the, Jaime and I talked about this the other day, the Apple's iPad commercial that they showed during the keynote, where they took all the fine, you know, implements of creativity, musical instruments, paint, lenses, and crush them into, like the theory is, crushing them down into make an iPad, iPad Pro, that is. And so they took some heat for that. And as we were recording on Spotcast the other day, Apple issued an apology for that ad. So I don't know if you guys have any comments. You want to rehash that one, Jaime?
I mean, I apparently I'm the one who's wrong, and everybody else on the internet is right, because even Apple apologized from a named person that the generic sort of, you know, press release thing. I can sense that, like, a successful edge not have this, you know, level of controversy around it, so it probably fails from that. Not necessarily out of its own fault. I do think that people are getting just a little oversensitive on completely unrelated topics, like, I'm sure we're going to talk about AI today, but, like, you know, AI robots coming for all our jobs or something. I'm like, okay, that's not what this was. Like, it's very clear that it's meant to be. Remember having an iPod, a phone, and an internet communicator as, like, separate devices? Like, we don't live that world anymore. And the iPad Pro is meant to show, like, look at all these things that it can do that would have been separate devices. Does that mean those things are... you know, no longer special in any sort of historical way? No. Does that mean that those things have less value? I think quite the opposite. It makes them more valuable, because it's not just another app or just another feature in software. I'm not even sure they actually crushed any real things, because there's very clear CGI for like some of the things that happened, like the little ball that got squished at the very end. So I'm not even sure that they destroyed priceless artifacts or anything. It's not like they took a copy of the Constitution and, you know, Tutankhamun's sarcophagus or something and just crushed it in there. Like I'm fairly certain that nothing of value was lost. So just all the angles seem really bizarre to me. But again, the internet apparently is correct on this one, and I must be the one who's having the problem.
Well, I 100% agree with you. I mean, I don't see what the controversy is. The way I took the ad was, they're taking all this big stuff and they're compressing it into this really thin thing. And that was like the whole point, right? The iPad is as thin as it's ever been. So they're taking all this stuff and they're making it into a really thin form factor. That's how I saw it. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, I think impossibly thin is the technical term.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like, I agree. It's a distillation of all these creative energies. I mean, what are they going to do? Put them in a big steam pot and extract the water out of it and with a distiller, right? Kind of thing. Yeah, it's silly. It's interesting. I saw a video. Lenovo did the same thing several years earlier, where they squished things, but they squished them sideways. So it's a little different than coming down from the top, I guess. And they did the same thing. They squished all this creative stuff into their Lenovo. I don't know if it's a computer, right? But that's that, right? Anyway, any thoughts on that, Evan, before we move on?
Yeah, I was just kind of hanging out, waiting to jump in. I actually have the same kind of thoughts as Jaime and Mark on this. And you, Tim. I did have sort of this like visceral reaction when I first saw it, what was happening, and I think that's intentional. But then when I saw what was going to be to happen, you know, you could tell like as it was going, you're like, oh, okay, they're going to squeeze it all into an iPad. I got it. And so, as that was happening, then I thought, well, this is actually kind of interesting. And I watched it again today and I didn't have any of those reactions. In fact, to me, it was like, well, you know, as a piece of like modern art or something, this, I could totally see this being in an exhibit, you know, these items in a display or whatever, and being crushed. And so I didn't really have any of those negative reactions. I don't know. People always want to be angry about something, right? So that kind of strikes me as this. I feel bad that Apple, that they published an apology for it, but that seemed a little extreme. But you know, I guess they want to keep everyone happy.
Yeah, ridiculous. I mean, I had that same visceral reaction too, because I mean, I looked, the first thing they squished is a trumpet, and I know what those are worth. Like, they're worth thousands of dollars if you want to buy one, right? And a grand piano. Not necessarily.
There's cheap ones too, but.
No, I know. And so what I was going to say is, we once had a family piano that we called in a guy to tune it, and he said, there's no way I can tune this piano. It's beyond repair. You have to, the only way to get it fixed would be to replace every string on it. And that would cost you probably three or four times what the piano is worth, right? So, I mean, we don't know that these things weren't on there destined for the dump anyway, right? But I think as an artist looking at this thing, you know, the way that the paint's got quart, they all squished at the same time. And I thought it was actually kind of beautiful, you know, but what do I know? What do I know about art? I have seen there's an artist in the 70s who used to squish cars into cubes. And then, you know, that would be the piece of artwork that he would exhibit in the gallery. You'd look at this squished, you know, Chevy, whatever, right? So anyway, cool.
So the controversial question would be, would Steve Jobs or Johnny Ive have apologized for this commercial?
You know, it's funny it's funny you mentioned that, Mark. That's the exact same thought I had as we were sort of tapering off on this discussion. I was like, yeah, Steve Jobs, if he had approved it in the first place, he would not have apologized.
Yeah.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
He might have said, you're crushing it the wrong way, but
I mean, he did throw a big sledgehammer at a giant screen at one point too, right?
Yeah. So.
All right. And then another little sort of side note on this, this event that happened, I didn't go back and watch, since I saw this story, I didn't go back and watch the video or the keynote again. Apparently Tim Cook was wearing a pair of Nike Air Max that were designed, the artwork on it was designed on an iPad. So I thought it was kind of cool. I don't know if you guys noticed that, but that was the sort of story that came out after the fact.
I think they're fairly subtle. You even look at the video, it's like, okay, only when they zoom in, I'm like, oh, yes, that does look like the ad worthy image at the top. I mean, they look very 70s retro, so that's cool. It's like a subtle, like you kind of have to know in order to know kind of thing. So it's nifty.
It reminds me of that car that I think it was a Porsche that was a race car that was dolled up with Apple insignia on it with rainbow, you know, the rainbow Apple and all that kind of stuff. Sort of reminiscent of that. And the next story is, this just came out today. Yes, it's May 15th. Apple announced new accessibility features, including eye tracking, music haptics, and visual shortcuts. What that is, so it's interesting that they're now, and they're claiming it's, I want to sort of point out something that about today's, or about the event we're going to talk about, is the number of times that AI was actually mentioned in the show, not quite nearly as much as, say, at Google I/O, for example, but if you listen to the talking about the new features and stuff like that, AI was mentioned. So one of the things here is they're going to enable eye tracking and AI to allow users who need help with accessing their devices to navigate around on the iPad in a similar way that we do on Vision Pro. Evan has one and I have one, and I can tell you that eye tracking is a really interesting sort of interface or way of dealing with the computer. It has its moments, but so that's kind of cool. And another piece that they're doing is for music, they're going to enable the haptic engine in the phone to sort of tap along with the music for people who have issues, you know, with hearing, that it'll make enjoying music a little bit better for them. And then a bunch of new things like speech. You can, and like one of the things I do with my Google and my Alexa is I tell it what I want to play. But I can, you know, instead of arguing with the device about what I might intended to say, I can tell it, okay, when I say this, I want you to do that. Right. And, you can do that here in, we'll be able to do that here in iOS. And sorry, I should say, by the way, the accessibility stuff is not just iPad. It's also iPhones. But to basically create recognizable sounds. And one of the things you can do in Vision Pro, for example, is when you click your tongue, you can have it open the home screen, which is right now requires a click on the digital crown. But you can turn on the accessibility feature, click your tongue, and then it'll basically open, same as opening a home screen. So that's kind of what this vocal shortcuts is about, is being able to create a phrase or a sound or something and have it perform an action. And also another one about for people who get motion sick when they're looking at their phones and they're being driven. I shouldn't say driving. It looks like it's going to have some sort of visual feedback on the device to let the person know in the direction in which they're traveling, accelerating, that kind of stuff, so that they won't get sick looking at their phone, kind of thing. And finally, we're getting vocal commands on CarPlay, so you can tell CarPlay what you want it to do, which will be super nice, right? I don't know if you guys use CarPlay in your device, or your cars.
My car is not CarPlay compatible, so no. I guess I could get a aftermarket mod for that, but
yeah.
No.
Sorry, Mark, do you have it?
No, my car is not compatible with it either.
Hmm. How about you, Evan?
Yeah, we have CarPlay. In fact, that was one of the reasons why I bought because I wanted CarPlay support. And but I always feel like kind of a newbie at CarPlay. I don't know why, but I did find this very interesting. And so I want to feel like I need to digest it a little bit more, see what the new functions are available to us.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I have a 2004 Honda CRV. So I added I went on Amazon and bought a not the first choice, but the second choice CarPlay screen. And basically what it is it's just a screen that it's actually your phone that's doing the work, but it's displaying. It's kind of like an external display for your phone. And then they limit the number of things you can do with CarPlay, obviously, because you're supposed to be driving. So, but it would be nice if you could sort of say, hey, you know, next episode, or skip ahead 5 minutes if you're listening to a podcast or something like that. Or, you know, oh no, they're talking about hockey again, let's skip ahead. You know, kind of thing. So that's cool.
Yeah, that's very cool. And I wish Apple would do more with CarPlay, because I feel like I'm always wanting just a little bit more. And so this is like, you know, one step closer, I think. That's great. The voice controls should be interesting to play with.
Oh yeah, and I also forgot there is a Vision Pro accessibility thing coming that they're going to have transcriptions while people are talking to you. So if you're, you know, part of hearing, you can actually see what the people are saying when you're on a call and that kind of stuff. So that's kind of cool.
That is very interesting. When I saw that, yeah. I thought, whoa, what a perfect use for Vision Pro.
Yeah. Well, a friend of mine is a Vision Pro accessibility aficionado. And he sent me a video the other day, you know, the dinosaur demo that they show you in as part of the App Store demo.
Yeah.
It's already got all the sort of accessibility indicators in there. So you can actually use, there's a cursor where you can actually point your finger and it follows your finger. If you don't have control over your eyes, you can actually just point with your finger and it kind of like has a big, not like a laser pointer, but it's like a big stick coming off it and you can sort of point at a button and that kind of stuff. But it also shows you it also gives you feedback on what is happening. Like, you know, what kind of sounds are being played if you can't hear them efficiently on your own, right? So, which is kind of cool. So like when the dinosaur is, you know, running away, sounds scraping against stone kind of noises come up, right? So, or like a little text blurb that says that. So
that's pretty cool.
And it's cool.
Yeah.
Which, you know, and it's interesting, just my comment about accessibility when, I think it was 2021 when I was at working for the fruit company, and the big push that year was accessibility at WWDC. So my prediction is, since they made this announcement today, there's going to be less emphasis, or there'll be, I mean, sure, there'll be accessibility talks, but I think there'll be, they want to try and move things around so they've got more time to talk about other things at WWDC. So that's how I read that.
Yeah, they've definitely been in a pattern of sort of clearing the decks of important, yeah, but things that, like, something can't make the cut when it comes to WWDC's keynotes and platform state of the union. And it's, you know, it is a nice confluence of different things that have come together here. So I threw in the show notes here for those of you driving at home. Google has a Project Game Face for Android that they just talked about. It's like an accessibility thing to control a cursor through the use of the face for accessibility. Mm-hmm. And the folks at Microsoft just announced the Proteus controller, this like sort of unorthodox, super customizable controller for people who have disabilities, so they can remap buttons, move faces and stuff around on the controllers. Like, just it's a thing where we can definitely do more as an industry, as a society, with regards to accessibility. But we are living in an era where this is an actual focus of some of the major technology companies. So we should not rest on anybody's laurels, but, you know, just tip the cap towards the folks who are doing this really hard work.
Yes. I saw a similar thing on LinkedIn a while ago, like the Proteus thing, where I forget what company it was, but wasn't Apple per se, but it was somebody, company that had come up with a controller that was programmable in terms of what the buttons would do, kind of thing. And you could also attach larger interfaces to it. So instead of, like, if the buttons were like, say, the size of a keyboard button, they would become bigger so that if you don't have fine motor skills, you can actually still tap the buttons and that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's kind of interesting to see what companies are finally coming around to doing to make accessibility a thing as opposed to just voiceover, right? And Microsoft does amazing work on accessibility, to be honest with you. All right. So just want to touch on Google I.O. We weren't planning on talking about that per se, but it was yesterday was the keynote, so I sat down and a friend of mine let me know it was on, so I sat and watched it while I had my lunch. And it was kind of like AI and then some AI with a little bit of AI mixed in and some tokens for AI and then some more AI. And in fact, what's his name? Sachin Adali. He, at the end of the keynote, he said, I guess you're wondering how many times we said AI, and they actually had the AI engine counting the number of times that AI was said during the keynote. And it turned out to be 121 or so, probably about 124 by the time that the talk was over. But Gemini is their AI product. Jaime, you watched Google I.O. as well, right?
Yeah. So for the next 20 minutes, Gemini is the name that they have settled on after Bard was the beginning name. And Duo and all these things, like, just ignore the marketing sort of nuttiness, and just your main takeaway from I.O., Google I.O., and it's worth talking about OpenAI's big drop of features and et cetera they did, like, the day before, and use that as a lens for where are things potentially going in the next year or two for Apple and WWDC. I think it will be a surprise if there isn't some sort of AI and large language model stuff in there. Apple may not use the word AI 121 times like Sundar Pichai and et cetera. They're certainly a very different kind of company. They're very privacy conscious. And so I think the kind of thing that I took away is, you know, this AI stuff is kind of the new mobile, right? Like, mobile was really hot, yeah, hot at the beginning, and everybody had to do something. You're just throwing mobile everywhere and sprinkling it everywhere, just seeing what sticks. I think we're in that era right now for AI. Clearly, Google sees an opportunity here to, you know, recapture some magic for itself. OpenAI with ChatGPT is really probably still the market leader, although we'll wait for the folks at like Stanford and MIT to do all the tests and the side-by-side bake-offs. But it's really neat stuff of, like, trying to make it really easy for handling things that these LLMs have not been good at, like multimodality. Hey, sure, it'd be nice if this thing could handle text and images and videos and speech and everything else together just sort of seamlessly, and yet giving you not just a simple text prompt that you can, you know, go ask something, but also letting you dive under the covers where you can build and train and tune your own stuff. They're going with Gemini for the name, sure, cool. And your own little sort of gems are your own little customizations that people can build. It's almost like the equivalent of like a plugin or an app. So I fully expect to see some of these sorts of things come to like imagine Xcode helping to analyze what the heck did the stack trace just show me? Can you help me fix this bug? What did I do wrong here? Can you help me start from scratch? Can you help me refactor this thing from, you know, Swift 2 to Swift 7, that sort of thing?
Yeah. And we should note that some of this stuff is coming to iOS as well through Google, but
there is a GitHub Copilot integration with Xcode. Have you guys checked that out? I don't remember who makes it.
Oh, that's Copilot is
Copilot GitHub. GitHub and Microsoft.
GitHub. Yeah. GitHub and Microsoft.
I've not tried that one. No. Have you tried it out?
Yeah, I have it on my work machine. I don't know. I don't think it's quite ready for prime time yet, and a lot of it is Xcode's fault. I think it's very it's actually quite slow, in my opinion. And this may be just the integration that this third party did, as opposed to it being Copilot's fault, but or GitHub's fault. But basically, it has a little window that's just following you around wherever you're typing, and it's always popping up suggestions, a lot like just the regular autocomplete. But it's much more in the way, I find. And it comes up with stuff. It hallucinates a lot more than just autocomplete does, which is kind of frustrating. I mean, it just creates things. For example, it will fill out like the cases for a switch statement, but it will make up cases sometimes, I found, which is a little weird. Yeah. So I don't think it's quite ready. And it's kind of slow. So I end up turning it off a lot just because it gets in the way. But I can see where it could be, could be useful in the future if it got better and were better integrated.
Yeah, I find that with ChatGPT too sometimes. Sometimes I'll ask it to help me with things, and it starts making these crazy suggestions that after a while I just kind of sort of like, looks kind of hacky to me, and like, oh, apologies, yeah, I think it is. But I interviewed Martin Woodward on the show a few episodes ago, and he's the dev relations manager, leader, whatever, at GitHub, and he was sort of explaining to me about some of the features of the Copilot product. Like, for one thing, I don't know if you guys know this or not, but with if you're in GitHub in a browser, you can actually, I forget how you do it, but he explained that you can actually start using, you can actually get it to open an editor for you, and then the Copilot comes right along with it. Without, I mean, this is directly in your browser without having to use Xcode or VS Code, but it's also in VS Code too, I should say, if you're doing development that way as well. That's cool. But they're adding like descriptions. Like, I mean, at the end of the day, Google to me is a search company, whereas Apple is a sort of a hardware company, you know, in their roots, right? And so a lot of the stuff that they demonstrated had to do with finding stuff, right? That's what my takeaway was on the keynote this time around. And they even showed a pair of glasses that you could put on that would, again, you could, it probably has a camera in the front of it, and you could look at things and say, what is this? Or, you know, how, like the example they had was a system diagram and saying, okay, how can I make this connection to the server more efficient? And, you know, so it just rattles off an AI answer kind of thing, right? I showed that to Carol, and she has never tried my Vision Pro, but she looked at it and she said, that's a toy. But, you know, but then again, that's what Google is, a search engine. So, I mean, it's all about giving you information, right? So, and that's what I found most of what my takeaway was. I didn't watch the developer talk. I don't know if Jaime has any insight on that, because he watched it, right?
Yeah, it dove a little bit more into some of these details. So when they talk about, training your own models and working with things that help these models, like having vector databases that can connect to it and make it easier for it to not just sort of not guess, but guess based on the large corpus of human knowledge. It's like, you know, it kind of looks like this shape of question. Take a look here. When you have, is it retrieval augmentation generation or retrieval augmented generation, RAG, that they mentioned? Is like, hey, these models are trained over some snapshot in time. This goes all the way up through 2021. This goes up to 2023. Cool. So when we ask it who won the Academy Awards, the raw model won't know that information, but you can add other models like, hey, guess what? Or add other sources of data like, hey, guess what? Wikipedia has all of the recent winners for the Academy Awards. So it can look at that and use that as a source. They went through more of that sort of thing, but surprisingly little in terms of code type stuff that you would expect to see. So for folks who don't normally watch the Google I/O keynote and then its companion, the developer keynote, it's roughly akin to Apple's WWDC keynote and the relationship to the platform's State of the Union, right? You get more of the marketing sizzle in the keynote, and you get more of the, this is for you developers, not for the investors, not for the news media kind of thing. Here's what you need to know. Holy smokes, you know, Swift data can do all this cool stuff kind of thing. That's traditionally true, but this one, the developer keynote was like a little fuzzy of like, it feels a little bit more marketing and less like, show me the code, show me what's going on here. More like, let me convince some execs somewhere that like this thing can do some code is what it felt.
Cool. All right. Well, we're here to talk about the iPad, or what do they call it? I forgot the name of it now. Letting Loose event that happened last week. We just had a scheduling conflict, so we couldn't really get together to talk about it, but we wanted to talk about all the stuff that was announced at the show. Obviously new iPads and new chips, so that's kind of interesting. So I've got a TechCrunch article here to sort of guide us. You know, we had the iPad Air 2 with I don't know if you guys want to go through it like we usually do and go through each thing at one at a time from our notes, or how do you want to dissect this, just talk about stuff, or no thoughts?
I mean, the outline in this TechCrunch article of like the various things that were announced as a sort of structure seems fairly useful.
Yeah. Okay.
Sure.
All right. Yeah. So we have a new iPad Air, and I'm not sure about the, so they have an 11 inch format and a 13 inch format, where they used to have an 11 inch format and a 12.9 inch format. So I don't know if it's physically bigger, smaller, or whatever. And there's always been sort of an argument between the way you guys measure the diagonal of a monitor and give it a marketing term in the US versus what we do in Canada. Even though we still call it, you know, whatever Apple tells us to call it, there's always been a sort of technical issue about whether it's really 13 inches or it's really 12.9.
Did the Air ever have a 13 inch version before?
No, I think that's only the new Pro piece.
Right, that's the new thing.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I don't
think that it's a brand new size. I don't think that's what they're implying.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So they're sort of saying the 11 and the 13
yeah. and 12. And I actually stopped into the Apple store today and they looked exactly the same. So there you go.
Well, I went last week. So they're in now, I guess, as of this week, or because I was there.
As of today, they were there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I went in, when did I go? I think I went at the end of the week last week and I stopped in at the Eaton Center Apple store and I didn't really see any devices and nobody was standing beside the table saying, hey, here they are, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, interesting things. And they've moved the camera to the landscape orientation, which is funny and ironic because I've been using an 11 inch Pro. I'm on my second version right now for years, and I have the Magic Keyboard thing. So my iPad is always 99% of the time in landscape mode, and yet the camera is on the portrait end, right? So it's nice that they finally moved that over. I think they've also is it 12 megapixels for the front facing camera on the Air, which is better for front-facing video. Doesn't have Face ID, but it has Touch ID, which is where you have to touch the power button to use Touch ID. And it works. I think it works. Is this the first time it's working with Magic Keyboard? I can't remember because they used to have like a Folio thing, right? Smart Folio. And the most exciting part is blue, purple, starlight, and space gray. Oh, and Liquid Retina display. So that's kind of cool. And then the price point's pretty good, $599 and $799 to start, right? Any thoughts?
Yeah, pretty good prices, especially for the 13-inch, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's $200 more, right? I had a 12 initially when they first came out, and I switched back to the smaller size because the 12 was just a little bit... Well, I mean, I already have a 13-inch laptop, right? So it's pretty much the same size as that, right? So... But still with the M2 chip, though, right? So I think one of the buzzes about this event was going to be the M4, which we'll talk about in a minute. But so here's the highlights for the iPad Air. You know, 100% recycled materials, M2 processor, Yeah, 12 megapixel landscape front-facing camera, 5G, Apple Pencil support, and it's the Apple Pencil 2 support, I believe. Up to a terabyte in storage, 12 megapixel camera on the back, works with a Magic Keyboard, and supposedly 3 times faster than the previous A12, I guess it was A12. So this is the first M chip in an iPad Air? Is that correct?
The last generation had an M1.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a graphic in the link that's in the doc that says 50% faster than the iPad Air with M1. So that makes sense.
Okay.
But also 3x faster than the iPad Air with the A12.
Right. Yeah, if you're thinking, should I upgrade, right? Cool. So Greg likes to know if we'll go around the table. Is anybody looking at getting an iPad Air anytime soon? Mark?
No, I have always gotten Pros, so I don't think I'd go to an Air.
Did you upgrade your Pro recently? You were going to do it last year, I think, right? Or 2 years ago?
I have one each of the 11-inch and the 13-inch. They're both a couple of years old, though, so I may be due for a new one. Maybe.
Sure.
Yeah.
Jaime, how about you?
No, I don't think I would get the Air because, spoilers, the Pro exists, and that's probably a little bit more interesting to me. And it's sort of weird, like, I'm not the first person on the internet to note this, but like the whole Air thing is a little bit different now, where it seems more like budget friendly is what it signifies.
And thicker.
Yeah.
Right.
There's more, it's filled with more air, scary. Just like the potato chips you buy at the vending machine. And so the airness of look how thin this thing is actually over in the Pro this go around. So we'll see if that stays true in the future. But because of that, I'm like, well, yeah, I might as well pony up for a Pro because I've been riding this current iPad Pro into the ground, and it's time for it to go live at a farm upstate.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering like how far back the Air title goes, because I'm just going to quickly do a comparison here. I think wasn't the iPad 4 called iPad Air? Is that when they first started using that name? It's been a while.
That was a long time ago. I don't know.
Wikipedia, where are you?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because I think one of them was iPad. iPad 3 was just called iPad, right? Remember, we were all confused about that back in the day.
So that was
both iPad 3 and iPad 4, as I recall, were just called iPad.
Yeah,
and I bought an iPad 3, and the iPad 4 came out like 3 months later. I remember being very annoyed by that.
Same thing happened to me too.
Yeah.
It's funny though, the iPad. We don't really cycle through our iPads as quickly as. I mean, the one I did was when the M1 came out. I switched to it, and then I was. I mean, delighted at the fact that I got an M1, but not so much that it's the reason I bought it for which stage manager was less than impressive, right? So
it looks like the first generation iPad Air was in 2013, October 22nd, 2013.
And which generation iPad was that?
First generation iPad Air announced in 2013. Oh, here we go. And this is per week. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the Air was sort of like the everybody else's iPad, right?
Yeah.
Back in the day? Like, wasn't the Air with the lower cost, or was it the top of the line until the Pros came out? I don't remember. For shame.
That's a good question. That's a really good question.
So, it comes in 128 to start, which is a bump, I think, up from where it was before, 512 and 1 terabyte in terms of storage. And we move on to the impossibly thin iPad Pro model. Again, 11 and 13 inch, they're calling it. 0.98 pounds, so less than a pound. Comes in silver and black. The interesting thing about this is it's an OLED display. I think probably the first time we've seen OLED on iPad, right? And actually two on OLED adhered together, and they're calling it tandem OLED. So you get, you know, up to 1,000 nits for watching standard def and high def video. But it has those combined to give you a 1,600 nit peak brightness on the device, which is pretty interesting if you ever need to change the oil on your car. XDR precision display, so they're calling that Ultra Retina XDR, because, you know, why not throw a whole bunch of adjectives together? And the option to have a nano textured glass option, which, you know, reduces glare, but I don't know about you guys, but I'm always using my big complaint about using a pencil on iPad is the tactile feel of, you know, a pencil on paper. So I use a paper light screen on my iPad, so that when I'm using my pencil, it doesn't feel like plastic on glass, right? And then the big news for this one, which was spoilers announced pretty, or not announced, but it was leaked pretty much before, was the M4 chip, right? And this is leapfrogging from M2 to M4, because I think it was M1, M2, and then M4 now, right?
Right.
And the features of, and that's 120 gigabytes per second for unified memory, hardware accelerated for mesh shading. Oh, hardware accelerated ray tracing, which is interesting. 28 billion transistors, dynamic caching, 3 nanometer technology. And then you can talk about the cores as well. And they're saying 50% faster CPU than the M2 and 4 times faster than GPU than an M2. So that was kind of cool. And the new feature, I think, for this one, and maybe it comes with the third version of the pencil, is the Pro Pencil, which now has the ability that you can squeeze it to get like a long press kind of thing. And you can, and as well, it has the hover, but it also has the ability to rotate, which is kind of interesting from an artist perspective, because sometimes, you know, even when you're using a brush, you might rotate the brush to get a different kind of effect. So that's kind of interesting that they've come up with that as a nice piece too for the iPad Pro. Because I think the Pro Pencil is available for both these new models, right?
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool that they support it on both the Air and on the Pro.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's got a squish sensor for you can programmatically change the way the paint or color is applied on your device, right, or your app. So, Mark, tell us about the M4. What do you think about it?
Well, you'll be disappointed, but I don't have a whole lot to say about it. It's not that interesting from a technology point of view. It's clearly an evolution, and it's an evolutionary thing. It's an incremental thing. I think they have moved into that mode where, yes, they're going to introduce a new chip every year, but you know, chips have been around for a long time, and they just get a little bit better every year. There's nothing like new and novel about this, in my opinion. It looks like it's pretty fast, which is great, and you'd expect that. But you know, it's an evolution. The most interesting thing to me is that they did skip the M3. They didn't do the normal take last year's Mac chip and stick it in the iPad. They didn't do that. They went directly to the M4. Now, that could be for a couple of different reasons. It may be that they just felt that, you know, the M4 was ready to go, and the iPad would be underpowered if they didn't do that. Maybe the M3 never had actually the right heat profile for the iPad. Maybe it just was never optimized for that, and M4 is. I don't know. I don't know the actual reason. I saw some rumors that there was like they're worried that there's a new Qualcomm chip coming out in PCs, and therefore. The Macs are going to have to get like a super powerful M5 or something. I don't know if it'd be probably wouldn't be an M5, but it'd be M4 Ultra super powered thing. So the lower end ones are now available for the iPad. That's possible. I don't know, but yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just, you know, it's just this year's version.
And it's interesting too that, you know, the Apple Silicon has always been in the iOS/iPad lineup, right? It's new to the Mac, right? The Apple Silicon, right?
Yep.
So that could be a reason why they kind of just jumped to the next chip in, you know, the hardware engineers jumped to the next chip, right? Because they know they're working on it. Here it is. Like you said, they got a stockpile of them. You know, they're busy, you know, not building Vision Pros, right? So it's interesting, just as a Vision Pro owner, I mean, like going into the Vision Pro, only having an M2 feels like a disappointment too, right? But I mean, I don't know. I don't know about you, Evan, but I've not really noticed anything laggy about Vision Pro so far. I mean, my M1 MacBook Air I've noticed Xcode bounces a few extra times than it used to back in the day, you know? So, and sometimes I get a memory warning or a CPU warning on the amount of things I have open and going on at the same time. But, you know, which is, I don't know if it's a, as the software, the operating systems get more sophisticated, you need to move to the faster chips, right? So, which has always been the case, right? Like if you try and run the new OS on the old chip, you always sort of have a bit of performance issues. Right?
Yeah, for sure. I haven't noticed any lags on the Vision Pro, but I don't consider myself to be a real power user of it yet. I'm trying to get to that point. What I thought was interesting was that during the presentation, you know, they didn't give us any really specific information as to why they made the jump to M4, but John Ternus in the presentation says this stunning design and breakthrough display required that we make the leap to the next generation of Apple silicon, you know, and of course that's kind of marketing speak covering over whatever it is the real reasons are. So maybe there was some design reason that they needed to move. I don't know. I really like what Mark said about the heat profile. That's very interesting. And then, and that could be it, just to give them a little bit more overhead. Maybe we'll
It's interesting because the iPads don't have fans per se, do they? Don't think they do, right? I mean,
no moving parts in an iPad.
Yeah, and these holes on the side, they're just speaker holes, I guess. Yeah, interesting.
Probably. Yeah, they might be for ventilation as well, but there's no fan for sure.
Yeah, because the Vision Pro has a fan or a couple of fans in it, right? Because if you put your hand over top of the Vision Pro when it's on, it's quite toasty up there, right? So,
yeah, that's true about the Vision Pro.
I mean, my problems with the Vision Pro are things like glare, but that's because we're looking at, you know, a couple of weird lenses, right? And super bright parts of a video or whatever will create glare. So I always feel like the lenses are dirty, but I just know it's like, that's my one beef about Vision Pro in terms of watching like Disney Plus stuff or whatever. I don't know. I still think it's better than watching a 3D video on Vision Pro than it is to go to the theater, right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
So there was a very subtle, and I said before, there was a very subtle mentions of AI announcements in this talk as well, in terms of like what they're doing with AI. There was a mention of Core ML at one point during the talk, but I can't remember why I wrote that down. But obviously Final Cut Pro 2 and Logic Pro 2 on iPad are coming out as well. And interesting that Final Cut got the ability to run four cameras at once, or do four camera previews at once, so you can actually do live directing like they kind of do it during a live sports event. You know, the director will be sitting looking at various cameras and flip over to them depending on what's going on in the play, or whether it's the kiss cam or whatever. Logic Pro has got a sort of an AI under the hood now in terms of a session player, so you can have actual accompaniment when you're jamming per se, or playing or composing underneath. And there was a feature, I forget what the purpose of it is, called Chroma Glow, which uses ML as well as part of Logic Pro, which is kind of cool. I don't know if any guys focused on that stuff at all.
That is one of the things that people were talking about, that, like, you know, if you assume that big AI things, big computationally expensive things are coming this year for WWDC and fall releases of software, it would make sense to get this chip out there sooner rather than later, so you're not held back by, well, it would do something cool, except M3 is just a little shy of what we needed, right? Like that would stink. So there's potentially a bunch of different reasons they jumped up on this one. Issues with the way that the manufacturing process works for the M3 is rumored. Like, it could be a bunch of things, but, you know, it's newer, it's better. Will they jump so quickly again? Maybe not. But I think, to Mark's point, they'll continue to make iterative improvements until we end up getting a big chunk somewhere else, just like the M series started the big jump.
It seemed like they focused a little bit more this time on the, you know, they went ahead and went through the other parts of the M4. Like, they talked about the four performance cores and the six efficiency cores and the 10-core GPU. And then they spent a little more time than I think they've done in the past on the NPU, which totally makes sense, the neural engine, because they really want to focus on that and the ML and the AI stuff. They definitely mentioned AI more than I think they've ever done in a presentation before. You know, the 38 trillion operations per second, the big slide for that. So they're definitely pushing us to focus, you know, more on the whole AI thing. And I actually want to watch the part about Logic Pro too, because that's very interesting to me. I only watched the part when reviewing about the Final Cut and where they actually created a new sort of side app too, the Final Cut camera, so that you can have those multiple cameras that feed into Final Cut. That was pretty impressive.
Yeah, and like I said, this is where I kind of tuned in on when they said AI, when they dropped the word AI or mentioned ML and that kind of stuff, is they're going, like, one of the things they have in is you can take an existing track that you don't have the source material for, and then using AI, you can split out the drum track and the bass track and instrument tracks, which is kind of cool. I don't know if that's in real time or not, but just to be able to split that stuff out and then do like a remix, right?
Yeah.
They call it stem splitter.
Yeah, and stems are really important for remixing, for DJs. And what I thought was really, well, I thought it was interesting that they included this in Logic. And thank you for mentioning it, because this was, for me, the biggest thing. So there's another app called Algorithm, or it's by Algorithm, and it's called DJ Pro. And it has this feature already. So it made me think if them having this kind of inspired Apple, or maybe they work together on this, because I know Algorithm, they do definitely work together. But Algorithm does this in real time. So you can play a track and you can split up the various elements of a song, and it does it using, quote unquote AI or whatever it is that, whatever analysis they're doing to be able to split up the parts. And so it sounds like Logic Pro 2 is doing something very similar. And I think that's really cool. It's great.
If I'm not mistaken, this is the same technology that the Beatles used very recently to take that last song that John Lennon had built a demo for, but it was too low quality when they tried to do it in the 90s to make anything out of it. But now they had the technology to do it. So they were able to pull out all the instruments and record extra parts. There were, Paul and Ringo could record extra parts around it. Mm-hmm. And the fact that that's now going to be available on an iPad is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's being squished into the iPad,
It's been squished into the iPad, that's right. Yeah. Now, okay, if they had squished Paul McCartney in that video, then I would have been, offended by that, I think. But so that would have been controversial. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Take that joke out. It didn't work. It didn't land.
It didn't land. Well, I'll cut parts of it. Yeah. I'll
I was muted, but I laughed.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'm just checking this note here. Oh, Chroma Glow. Okay, what is this? Oh, this is for creating tones, for mixing. Ooh, maybe I can fix my podcast with Logic Pro on the iPad. I don't know if I still haven't bit the bullet on Logic Pro on the iPad yet. I mean, I mix my show in Logic Pro on my Mac, but I've never found the iPad great at audio mixing. So we'll have to see. Maybe I should take it out for a trial. I think I spoke to somebody who's using it, but...
And I can't remember, did they also feature, I'm sure they did, using Apple Pencil for the editing of this? Because that's something I would very much like to try.
By the way, I'm just reading the fine print here. Logic Pro Mac for Mac 11, which is a bump up from 10, is available May 13th and is a free upgrade for existing users. Oh, that's good. Or $199 for new users. That's good to know. I was afraid I was going to have to shell out some more cash. And then Logic Pro 2 for iPad is free update for existing users, or it's $4.99 per month or $49 per year. So yeah, interesting. Even though I use Logic Pro, I'm not the biggest fan of Logic Pro, to be honest with you. Yeah.
I use Ableton for all of my audio work. So Ableton Live. And I've had such a hard time to extricate myself from that Logic Pro, just because it's so easy to work with. But the whole, I know you can use tools like Ferrite for editing with your pencil, but being able to use Logic Pro and a pencil, there's something there that's really enticing.
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying. Like, the times I've tried, I have Ferrite, I've tried, and that's what I found. When I did edit the podcast with Ferrite, the levels were way too low, and I don't know why. And there's no reason or rhyme or reason as to why I couldn't make them better, right? So, because there is an episode of Spotcast up that was edited on the Ferrite, and it's quite bad audio quality, in my opinion, right? So I'm trying to find out what's new in Final Cut. Oh, here's Final Cut Pro. Magic Keyboard. There's an article here on Final Cut Pro. What great things have they got? We're using AI for over there. What's the cost of Ableton?
I think it depends on what level you purchase. It's a single. Mm-hmm. It's not a subscription.
Right.
Tight.
All right. So back to the iPad Pro. Starts at $256. That's at $999 US for the 11-inch version. And just gonna grab the 12 here. Probably $200 more, I think. Right. Where's the pricing?
So just to answer your question, Ableton Live, the intro version, which is the very limited version, is $99. $99 US. And then 12 standard is $439. And then the suite, which is the big thing that gives you everything, is $700.
That's not bad. $99. That's a pretty reasonable price. When I got Logic Pro, I think it was $900. so 11-inch iPad Pro starts at $999 for Wi-Fi, $1,199 for Wi-Fi and cellular. The 13-inch is $1,299. Oh, that explains the $200. Oh, it's $300. Whoa. $1,299 for Wi-Fi and $1,499 for the cellular. So why is a cellular $200? That's weird. I guess that's what it is, right? So, and then I believe... What's the capacity? Up to 2 terabytes. So it starts at 256 gigs and goes up to 2 terabytes of space on your device. I've never really saw a reason to have a lot of space on my iPads, per se, or even my phones. But I guess if you're doing Final Cut video, because Final Cut is awful on the Mac in terms of disk space. Like, it just chews through when it's rendering, creating the rendering files. When you're doing the layering stuff, it's constantly have to clean up the library because it just gets bloated, and I can't imagine what that's like on an iPad, or how you even manage it on an iPad, because I can't see it. Right on the Mac, I can see the size of it as it grows. Cool. So round the table, who's getting an iPad M4 Pro? I mean, Mark.
Sorry, I lost my window with my mute button.
Wait till you try Vision Pro. You lose your window all the time. You leave it in the kitchen.
Yeah, I may get one of these. I may be due for an iPad. I don't have a lot of urgency to update my iPads. You know, they seem to last a long time. I've always been like this. You know, it's you know, this kind of, I don't know. There's no urgency to me, so I may, but I may not.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Carol's on a Pro. But she's the 9-inch Pro, the 10-inch Pro, 9-inch Pro, I think. So, and it's at the point where it needs to be, it can't do the things anymore, right? So I may get one and then downgrade her, or hand down mine to her, right? Hand me down mine, right? Mm-hmm. So that would be a reason why I would get one. Because I mean, I gave her my iPad and the Pencil, and the Pencil's still sitting in the box, right? So the original Apple Pencil 1, whatever you call it.
Yeah, I guess it depends on if they really do announce something at WWDC that is going to need that M4 processing power. That would probably incentivize me to get one. But if not, I don't know. We'll see.
Cool. How about you, Jaime? What do you think of getting a new iPad Pro?
Yeah, I think I probably will, because I'm using what I think is the Apple iPad Pro 10.5-inch from 2017. And I didn't have an urgent need to replace it all these years. It's kind of been more paper cuts, as like Safari, which is randomly lock up for a while for like no really? Clear reason. I'm like, what did I do? I just used Touch ID to unlock, and it happens to be on Safari. Why can't I open a new tab and browse? That's really weird. So it's reaching the end, and I didn't jump at the opportunity to get this new iPad. I'm like, I'm fairly certain there will be some available again, because it wasn't like an urgent need. It's not, I guess it is a daily device, but it's not a keep it with me all the time kind of device like my phone that I update more regularly. So as incremental as it's been for you know, people who've been keeping up with these, like, I'm sure it's going to be astounding when I get whatever new device, but it'll definitely be a pro.
Mm-hmm. Cool. How about you, Evan?
I think for right now, I won't be getting either the Air or the Pro. I have an M1, you know, the 12.9 iPad.
Yeah. Those Canadians are happy.
You know what I mean. So, and it's been working fine for me. The one thing I'm concerned about is that my daughter has an iPad that is dying, and I'm kind of thinking maybe it might make more sense for me to upgrade and then have her take this, or, you know, we do some kind of cascading thing where the devices go down. But right now, especially since I just bought the Vision Pro this year, I don't think I can rationalize the expense yet. However, that maybe next year, if it's urgent. It also kind of depends on what Apple rolls out as far as their computer. So even though I'm doing fine with my, you know, the M1 Pro that I have, I guess both of them, 2020. So right now I don't feel the urgency either yet.
Has the Vision Pro paid for itself yet for you?
I don't think so. Not quite. I think it's mostly it's because I haven't really put it through its paces and been using it from the developer's perspective. And so that's one of the motivations. I really need to do more with it from that angle.
Right. Cool. And for me, I mean, like I said, the only reason I would get one, I got into development because of the iPad, right? Or iOS because of the iPad. But I don't know. I don't know if I would. I mean, I primarily use my iPad for note taking and that kind of stuff. You know, I take it with me when I go to conferences and stuff like that, or if I go to meetings. I rarely take the pencil with me. In fact, I just started charging my pencil now because it's down to 0%. For me, yeah, my phone, my Vision Pro, and my Mac are sort of the three that I'm kind of gravitating towards these days, right? So that's how I would answer that question. All right, well, so we move on to our picks. I got a couple of things here, actually three. One is this cool little graphic website, but I know people have made apps to do this. If you ever want to know what the size of the fonts are, you know, the dynamic type fonts in terms of what they're called, you know, Title 1, Title 2, you know, large title, headline, body, caption, footnote, those kind of things. This person here has put together San Marino, or I guess, no, created by Letvar in San Marino, has put together this little web page. And I assume if you run this on your phone, it'll render in the right size for you. The other thing too, and this is going back a couple of weeks now, Apple released a bunch of templates for designing interfaces with Figma. So they have a whole Figma page here in terms of like how you want, like example designs that you could use and template to build out UI in Figma if you need. And then of course, you know, if you have Figma, you can generate, I think you can generate code for it as well. So they've even got a VisionOS library in there as well, which is kind of neat. So that's my pick for that. And the last pick I have is I am going to be in Cupertino for the week, not the keynote, but I'll be there the next day on Tuesday. From Tuesday to Thursday, I'm speaking at the One More Thing conference on VisionOS. I don't know what day I'm speaking. And James Dempsey and the Breakpoints will be performing sometime that week, and I will probably be on stage for that. So that's kind of exciting. So I've booked my plane tickets, and I'm on my way to Cupertino for the festivities around. I don't know if you guys caught the episode I did with Charlie Chapman from Revenue Cat and Dark Noise. He talked about the fact that, you know, the week during WWDC, there's always things to do. People will gravitate towards San Jose and Cupertino, and you just ping people and people will come to a coffee shop and hang out with you. So it's not quite as big as, you know, the online event or the week-long event at WWDC used to be, but there's lots of stuff happening. And, you know, it's the hometown of Mark Rubin. It's the hip happen in place, right? So
true.
And then we'll throw over to Jaime for some picks.
Yeah, I have a couple of links here that this is crossover material between More Than Just Code and Spotcast, where Google, during, I believe, the developer keynote, announced the Gemini API Developer Competition, and they have Christopher Lloyd as the person promoting that. You can win, you know, your share of prizes, including the best overall app will win a custom electric 1981 DeLorean, which is, you know, that's nifty. They definitely leaned right into something that would, you know, fetch people's imaginations.
Interesting. All you should do, oh, Flutter as well. Best Flutter app. I thought they closed down and laid off a bunch of Flutter people. Interesting. Cool. And what's your other pick?
The next one here is the source code for Adobe Photoshop. Before you get all excited, it is Macintosh version 1.0.7, copyright 1989 to 1990. So this little article talks about some of the history of that. Obviously, there's a long storied history between Adobe and Apple and the Mac. You kind of have to dig a little bit. It was a little non-obvious. I just whipped right past it and said, oh, where's the link? Because the thing that they say is download Photoshop version 1.0.1 source code. My brain said, that's clearly an ad. Go past it. Started looking at the commentary and the source code. Oh, that's really interesting. Cool. Early Photoshop screenshots. I'm like, wow, you can sort of see the, you know, you kind of squint and you'd be like, yeah, I think that's Photoshop. It still kind of looks like that today. Right. These must be wireframes, right? Black and white wireframes. And this is what it was. And
yeah, there was no color in that app. I still have my copy of 1.0 Photoshop, and I had it running on my iPad for a while too, in an emulator. But yeah, it was interesting because I shouldn't say it wasn't in color. You could look at, I used to do CMYK print work, right? And I believe you could look at RGB in color, but when you wanted to look at CMYK, it would come up in glorious black and white, and you'd sort of have to guess that that's what it looked like. When you put it together, you have to print it out and actually see how it worked. But yeah, it's cool. And this would be on the classic system, Mac system, right? So I don't remember the box. I guess the box did look like that. But I still have my floppy disks too for Photoshop as well.
As a real-time follow-up to this pick, I see that the organization that is offering the code is the Computer History Museum here in Mountain View, California, which is a extremely cool place to go and spend a few hours to see all the old 80s and earlier hardware that a lot of us first learned how to code on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went there when one of my nephews works at Cisco, and we met and went through there. And I mean, they've got the Altair computer, which is where the GUI came from, the current GUI we use now came from, as well as, you know, there's I made a video of all the game systems. So there's, like, you know, the NES and all the Sega stuff in a sort of glassed environment as well. There's a box of Photoshop over there too on the wall, but I took a picture. I think it was Photoshop 3, which is a green box. But yeah, and it's cool. And they've got, like, I think they have an Enigma machine, if I'm not mistaken. And they had, they have somebody made a difference engine, Babbage's difference engine, if I remember correctly, it's there. Big brass thing, right? Yeah, it's cool. And it's right across the street from, well, relatively across the street from Google. Isn't that right?
It is, it is. Essentially on the Google campus, because even though officially it's not, but the Google campus has grown and surrounded it and bought up all the buildings around it. So, you know, in effect, it kind of is.
Yeah. And of course, the Photoshop was written, coming back to Jaime's pick, Photoshop was written by the Knoll brothers, right? John Knoll was with Industrial Light and Magic for a while. He was involved in the Jurassic Park special effects and stuff like that. And I think these guys aren't the two that did the Myst series, were they?
No, those are the Millers.
Oh, not them. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So these Knoll guys, in the early days, you'd see John Knoll and Thomas Knoll right there on the tin, in terms of, like, when you launch the app, you would see this would be the screen you would see as it loaded, right? Cool. Love to see. Oh, look, and the serial number is right there. You can copy it down and install it. We install your Photoshop with it.
That's cool. I also recommend folks take a look at the PDFs of the user guide and the tutorial that I think are very clearly scanned from physical copies. There are holes in the paper where I assume a spiral binding was used to keep it together.
Neat.
An awesome.
Cool. So that's sort of Mark's Computer History Museum, sort of Mark's stealth pick. Is that what we called it when sure. Greg used to do the stealth pick? Did you have a pick for us, Evan? Or
I do. Kind of threw one together last minute.
Sure.
Technically two, but I was like, oh, that's right. I need to do a pick. So my picks are two books that you have probably read. Maybe some of the listeners have already read as well, but I found them to be really interesting right now for me. The first one is called Insanely Simple, The Obsession That Drives Apple's Success. And that's by Ken Segal, Segall. It basically talks about Apple's drive for simplicity in their design. And I found it fascinating. What's interesting for me is that it was a book that I had the hard copy of, and it sat on my shelf forever. But recently I started doing audiobooks, and this was on my list of audio books. And I find like I can actually finish books now. This is amazing. If I do Audible. Yeah. So that was one of them. And it was really, really fun to read. The other one is another book. I'm sorry, I didn't have any exciting, you know, current fun links to share with people. But the other one was another book, and this is Becoming Steve Jobs, The Evolution of a Reckless Upstart into a Visionary Leader by Brent Schindler and Rick Tetzley. And the reason I like this is because it was a different take on a different time period that some of the other, you know, like the Walter Isaacson biography takes. This really talks about that period of when he's out from Apple through Next and Pixar and all of that kind of thing, and then coming back to Apple. So, and how transformative that period was for Steve Jobs. So I thought it was way more interesting than I thought it was going to be. But I guess that's why it's a pick for me, because I was like, whoa, this is really, really cool to get an insight into that particular period of his life. So that's it. Those are the picks.
Yeah, I think I read that book. I think it might have been a pick for me years ago. But the thing, is that the one where you get the impression that Apple was really kind of winging it for a while there, too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like everybody thinks they have this big master plan. They probably do now, because, I mean, that's the way business runs. But there were some decisions made, like, in the spur of the moment that, you know, became something we deal with every day kind of thing, right? So it's a really, really good read if you're a Steve Jobs fan or even just casual observer. It's a great book, great biography of him, for sure.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it gives some different sort of insights into his personality and his drive.
Yeah.
Great, great book.
All right. Well, I guess that's it for another episode. So Mark, if people want to get in touch with you, where would they find you?
That's a good question. MarkR@smopsofts.com probably still works.
Probably. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And Jaime, if people want to get in touch with you, where they find you?
I'm on Twitter as @devofthehair.
All right. Still hanging onto that Twitter. And Evan, people want to get in touch with you, where they find you?
Yeah, probably the best, or at least the place where I'm most active, is on Mastodon. And my account is evankstone@iosdev.space. I still am on Twitter also, and it's one of these things, like, everybody's still there, so I have to keep going back. And my account there is evankstone also. And also, you can find me at Swift Remote Studio, and you can probably find Tim there too.
Yeah, no, I was going to give a plug for Swift Remote Studio just to take a minute here. This is a group that Evan set up that is a lot of indie developers and just remote workers. I was pitching it at Deep Dish Pizza, Deep Dish Swift in Chicago a couple of weeks ago when I was there. And I think we got a few recruits out of there, but
yeah, I think so.
Thank you for doing that too. No worries. I mean, because if you're out there working on your own and you're, you know, sitting in your room or kitchen or wherever it is you're working, it's nice to be able to, we get together about 12:30 my time, Eastern Standard Time, for a coffee call. I guess it's first thing in the morning for you, Evan?
Yeah, roughly. For me, yeah, it's like 9:30 a.m.
Yeah. So, and we just get together on Wednesdays and talk about stuff, you know, we're working on, right, and challenges we're having, and, you know, just whatever is exciting. And as well as also a Slack channel, and Evan's very good about posting the latest news there. And there's like a Vision OS channel, and there's like other channels around, and you can ask other, you can do pair programming with other engineers if you want to do that, if that's your thing. But, and then we also, on Friday, we meet for like a sort of, I guess, a 3:30 my time, Eastern Standard Time, which I guess is what, 12:30 for you?
Yeah.
And we do goals. So we talk about what we accomplished during the week, and what we're working on. And then we talk about what we'd like to work on next week, and which is kind of motivating, but you get to sort of, you know, help each other and congratulate each other on accomplishing things and stuff like that. So it's kind of, it's a good group of guys that meet up, and yeah, definitely. If you're, that's something you're looking for, I'll put a link in the show notes here for Evan's site that he set up to make it super easy for people to join up. And there, it's not just in North America. There's also a European contingent, I believe, right?
Yeah. It's kind of organically grown from the original, I guess the way we set up with the coffee calls. But some of the European members said, hey, we'd really like to be able to meet. Is it okay? And I said, sure, just let me know what time you want to do it. And they actually have kind of taken the bull by the horns and have set up their own meeting. It's at 9:30 a.m. I want to say just Central Eastern time. I'm not Eastern, Central European time. I'm not sure exactly, you know, what that corresponds with, if that's Germany or what. And I can never convert it to, you know, UTC or any of that stuff either. The time zones, they just have been killing me on this project. But they set it up themselves. It was great. I just said, hey, can you type this particular command into Slack, and then it will remind you every week. And somebody did it, and it's just going. Same with, we also have an Asia Australia group too. That's been very slow to form, but I've noticed just in the last week, it seems to have picked up. So I'm hoping that will sort of take off also.
Cool. Yeah, definitely. Like I said, it's a great sort of, it's a great avenue to not just talk to your dog, right?
Exactly. That was the whole point of, you know, the setting it up was, originally I had envisioned it as being sort of like a, and it still is, like if you go to the site, it says that it's a co-working community. And so that's the idea is like, you know, if you're at a physical co-working spot, you just kind of, you know, wander in there and you talk to folks and maybe shoot some ideas around. And that's kind of the way that we've been taking it, I think. And it's just, I think it's been working pretty well. We have over 150 members, but of those 150, I think it's kind of, you know, less than 10 who are, you know, active, you know, all the time. Right. But it's fine as long as somebody's there listening and having fun and enjoying it. And it makes me glad that you and also like Steve Lipton also have been really been getting benefit out of it. So that's really great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I have to schedule my dog walks around being back for the 12:30 call.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. They enjoy it. And I listen to audiobooks when I'm walking the dog too.
Nice.
Another plug for that. So my name is Timitra, T-I-M-M-I-T-R-A, on the Twitter machine. But I've, you know, it's funny, I spend more time on Threads these days because Threads, for some reason, shows me more music related and performance related, late night TV related clips. So I go to Twitter because, like you said, the people are there. But, you know, I check in on Mastodon maybe every couple of days. But I think Threads is something that I can definitely get caught, you know, hanging around there for too long. So, but yeah. And then of course, LinkedIn as well, but you can find me on LinkedIn if you look too, but yeah. And so until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
This has been another episode of the More Than Just Code podcast. If you want to find out more about the show, you can visit the More Than Just Code website at mtjc.fm. There you can find a summary and show notes of each episode. We list links to the apps, code, and news that we mentioned on the show. If you like the podcast, tell your friends. Please leave a comment on the website, and if you can, please write a review on iTunes. And please recommend us in your favorite podcatcher. All of these things help others find out about the show. We really appreciate your help with spreading the word. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'd love to hear from you. So use the hashtag AskMTJC. Once again, the podcast Twitter account is at MTJC_podcast. Please consider supporting the show by pledging any amount on patreon.com/MTJC. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.